G'day everyone, and welcome to episode 41 of Expand the Phantom podcast. We have a ripper episode in store for you today. We've got something we've been wanting to do for quite some time. It's the great debate, the Forkists versus the Modernists. And the topic for our conversation will be Lee Falk's Phantom is the one true Phantom. Now, I'll host the debate between our two combatants. I better welcome our first combatant.
I'm so postmodern that I break dance in waiting rooms, play Yahtzee in nightclubs at 3 in the afternoon. I'm so postmodern I only go on dates that last 13 minutes via walkie-talkie while hiding under the bed. I'm so postmodern I invite strangers to my house and put on a slideshow of other people's nans. I'm so postmodern I went home and typed up everything you said and printed it out in Wingdings and gave it back to you.
Jermaine, he's always with us. So, Jermaine, how you
pretty
going?
Pretty good, mate. Pretty good. I'm not sure why we need to do this debate. We already know that, you know, the modernist is the way to go, but...
Okay, well, we'll see what the other side has to say about that. Now, your opponent for today, I believe he comes from Queensland. He's a Forkist through and through. Put your hands together for Mr. Dan Fraser.
G'day, Stephen, Jermaine, everybody.
How are you going, mate?
Excellent. Now, Dan, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. How long have you been a fan? You know, what got you into it, and have you got any prized possessions?
Well, thanks, Stephen. I'm nearly 40, just had a birthday, nearly 40, and I've been into the fandom since before I was 10, so going on 30 years now. I think probably the same as most people. It was Dad's comics that got me into it in the first place. And so, as a result, my early Phantom memories are all around the Froo Phantoms from the 70s and the 80s. And as you'd be aware, that's mostly Lee Falk, which is, I guess, where it all comes from. In terms of prized possessions, obviously the Froo collection's right up there. I've heard a lot of what Jermaine's had to say about the Froos, and I think he goes back to 700 and has collected since then. I've got something like 1400 Froo comics now, and slowly ticking them off, but they're starting to get very expensive in the sub 200s, so might be a long time. I've also got a very special piece on the wall. There's a Cy Barry original Sunday, which I particularly love, and I did put a long story on one of the Facebook groups about the Phantom replica pistols that I purchased, and took 12 months to get into the country as well. So those are probably my...
Oh, that was you. I remember that reading that story.
Yeah, I'll have to share that sometime, I suppose. But, yeah, so they're fantastic. I did take them to school and shoot them, which is the only place I'm legally allowed to because I was starting some races at school. And that was a bit of a thrill. So, yeah.
Oh, excellent.
So you're legally allowed to shoot kids at a school?
No, I'm allowed to shoot a gun and they all run away.
you're allowed to legally shoot a gun at school. Okay.
There's some crazy laws. It's the only place I'm allowed to take them.
And just to be just so we're clear, they only fire.
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. They're starting guns.
Oh, so I thought it was I thought it's the way you Queenslanders do things these days.
Well, you got to keep the crocodiles and the waters away.
So, what was I going to ask? So, as a Forkist, about your collection, do you have any non-Fork comics, like any Dynamite or King or?
Yeah, for sure. Like I've.
Do you read them or?
I do. I've only read the first three of the recent Hermes series, because once they took a year to get the first three out, I thought I'll wait until the whole six come through so I can read them all in one go. And I did enjoy those. And the King's Watch.
Well, hang on. You said you enjoyed them.
I did.
Oh, that's not, you're not a true Forkus then, mate.
Oh, no, but the reason I liked him is because the way he harkened back to Fork stories, brought back the Fork characters. Yeah.
It was very much part of the Fork universe, that story.
Absolutely. With all of, Jimmy Olsen coming back and, the whole, you're absolutely right.
Okie dokie. Any more questions for your opposition there, Jermaine, or are you good to go?
No, I reckon let's get into it. Let's get into it.
Wasn't that much trash talk. I was expecting you to trash talk.
I don't know.
You've got to be careful, though. Your mouth gets you in trouble. Then,
yeah, that's it. I got in trouble for one of my last comments two podcasts ago about some secondhand.
You won't repeat what you said.
Some secondhand goods. But yeah, I'll try and keep it PG.
Very good. Yes, and like we say, we always take feedback on board, and we'll look, if we're going to give out critiques, we expect to be a critique.
That's it
as well. Yeah. Okay. So, like I said at the start of the show, our debate is Lee Falk's Phantom is the one true Phantom. So Dan will be taking the side of the affirmative, and so he'll be going first when we get started, and Jermaine, being the modernist that he is, he'll be taking the negative. Now, to try and rein these two fellas in, I put a 5-minute time limit per argument, and I'll ring a bell, but the sound effect probably won't work, so I'll just tell them they've got 1 minute left when four minutes is up. Anything else before we get started there, fellas?
No, good luck, Jermaine.
Yeah, you too, buddy. Just so people know, we are all friends and we'll stay friends. I think the Phantom's too small a world to hate people. This should be fun. I've actually got a lot of Forkus friends. So I must admit, they'll know who they are. They've probably heard a lot of my arguments a few times. It'll be good. I'm looking forward to it, Dan.
Yeah, cheers, mate.
Excellent. So, yeah, this all is in good fun. We're not expecting the bile that came out back earlier this year when people didn't know what was going to happen.
They were all the Forkus as well who were all the most upset as well.
Well, let's not go.
Traditionalists, we like to go down to the newspaper shop every Thursday. Don't mess with routine.
Yeah. Well, then, no, they did mess it because it used to be Fridays. Now it's anyway. Okay, Dan. So when you're ready, you can head off with your first argument.
All right. So thank you very much, gents. So obviously I'm here to prove the point that Lee Falk's Phantom is the one true Phantom, and it's hard to believe that we're even here having a debate about this because it's just incontrovertible, to be honest. My first point tonight is going to be around the mythology of the Phantom and the creation of the mythology of the man who cannot die. Lee Falk, over 80 years ago, conceived this idea of a dynasty hero, the very first the very first comic book hero to wear the tight costume, and every story that he wrote over the 60 years or so that he contributed or wrote Phantom stories contributed to a grand legacy that's been left behind. The origin story that Lee Falk envisaged of a boy washed up on a remote beach, found the body of his father's murderer, swore the oath on the skull to fight evil and to fight piracy for the rest of his life, and that all of his sons would follow after him, is just something that resonates with so many people and created a hero that could be placed at any time in history, which has been a wonderful advantage to so many stories that have come since. Every Phantom that replaced the last built on that character and evolved that mythology. And so you had some of the early Phantoms completing some fantastic feats of strength, giving birth to the old jungle sayings about the strength of 10 tigers and these sorts of things. And no one Phantom is responsible for the myth, but all of their stories combined have created this fantastic mythology and history that we all love today. All of the old jungle sayings, I've already mentioned one of those, but the hundreds, there's 100, 150 old jungle sayings, vast majority of which Lee Falk created, are linchpins that other stories can then go from. Over 60 years, Lee Falk was generating and creating more and more stories, and each of those, as I say, contributed to that mythology. So I don't think there can be any argument that mythology, which has created this hero that we all love so much, is the Phantom. There's no doubt that that's the Phantom. Any other story that doesn't have that root in father to son, swearing the oath on the skull ring, the good ring, the skull cave, the deep woods, all of the stuff that Lee Falk created, if you don't have a character with that, it's not a true Phantom. And so therefore, Lee Falk's Phantom is the true Phantom.
Ooh, some good points there, Dan. Jermaine?
All right. For a sec there, I thought you were arguing for my side. Okay. First of all, as I believe that the Phantom is, from a modernist point of view, it is Falk plus. I agree that Lee Falk, you know, he was a master. He created the Phantom. I commend and agree with everything you've said up until the point where you said that's basically where it stops. Unfortunately, there has, for the Phantom to go on, like you've talked about with the previous Phantoms that build on the mythology, even the new stories do that as well. The same type of thing, whereas the Phantom goes from one Phantom to the next, you know, son after son after son. So does the new stories after Falk. There has to be new people that carry on the legacy. Or even also sort of like with the Old Testament and the New Testament for the religious people out there, where the New Testament adds to the Bible story, the new stories add to the Falk mythology. And it also brings in some new fans for the younger generations. So I got a couple of examples here. If you have a look at Tintin, Modesty Blaze, and a couple of other popular newspaper or creating stories back in the days that were classic, that have a huge cult following, they all stopped creating new stories when the creator died. Unfortunately, people pass on. However, you can't really have a story or a character like the Phantom, or even like Tintin, Asterix, Prince Valiant, Modesty Blaze, Batman, Superman, all these other type of people, that they are bigger than their creator. So, you know, and it's the same type. So that's probably my rebuttal to what you're said. Now, I got a few things that I want to raise. First of all, if we want to get down to the nitty-gritty, we could almost say that Lee Falk didn't create all the newspaper stories. There is a bit of a rumor going on that more than once, but especially during the World War II, his stories were ghosted while he was stationed overseas. So if we wanted it, so there's a bit of a counter argument that the mythology that you have created, that you have explained very, very well, my worthy opponent, were not actually created all by him. And then I want to raise another point. Name a classic Falk story past the 1970s. Can you, besides the wedding and, you know, besides the wedding, name a classic Falk story past the 70s. Are you able to do that on the spot, Dan?
I'm not sure that I need to. I don't think it fits into... I don't think that's part of the argument. Because the Phantom pre-70s is the one true Phantom. That's what I'm talking about.
So, but is the true Phantom pre-1970s, or is it all Lee Falk? This is the point that I'm raising here, is that while Lee Falk was at his peak back in the day, he definitely waned towards the end of his era, so to speak. And I just don't think that not all of his stories are true classics. So that was the point that I was trying to raise. I'll leave it there and I'll let Dan come back.
Okay, thank you, Jermaine. So a couple more good arguments. I like the old putting religion there, being a religious man myself. I don't know if Jews will agree with you, but, story. But being a Catholic, I think it does.
That point was just for you, mate.
And there was a bit of a backhanded compliment, I think, there at some stage. I can't remember what you said, but it sounded like you're giving Dan a bit of a rev up, and then bang, you brought him back down. So
it's a cunning tactic, but I'm not falling for it.
Ah, very good. Okay, Dan, so when you're ready.
All right, so first up in terms of rebuttal to the points that Jermaine outlined, look, if you want to come up with a classic story, is the term that you coined, I would say The Jungle Olympics is a classic story of Lee Fawkes, and that was written in the 90s. The Fourth Son, about the triplet, the ninth phantom and the triplets and the runt, that was also written in the 90s, and I'd regard those as classic stories of Lee Fawkes that added to the mythology. That the Jungle Olympics didn't occur before then, so that would be my point there. In terms of rumours that Lee Fawkes didn't create every story, I'm not sure that I'm going to buy into the idea of rumours. If we don't know for a fact, if we can't point to a story and say this is a person who wrote it, I don't know that that's something that we can really take with too much seriousness. Your point there about having new stories and allowing new authors to move on with the stories, I take your point. I think that is an excellent point, and I think it's fantastic to see new authors attempt to do that. But it's really interesting to see the response to people. So I'd ask you, Jermaine, you put me on the spot with a question. What did you think of the King's Watch Phantom?
The King's Watch. So that's the first one, correct?
That is the first one. That's the Phantom, who is just some random person we never know, and he is eventually replaced by Lothar.
I actually thought, to be truthfully honest, I thought The King's Watch was one of the better stories that we've had in probably the last 5-10 years.
Well, you've got to say that now. I appreciate that. But what about when the follow-up series...
You're totally setting me up here.
The follow-up series where Lothar was joined by, I can't even remember their name, the girl and Garan, and they're a three-way Phantom. You would have enjoyed that, surely, as a movement forward.
This is awesome.
I'll tell you what. I'll let you think about that one.
Obviously, you've listened to the podcast, and you know that that's the second and so far the third series of King's Watch is utter crap. So I will give you that.
Oh well, I'm shocked. I had no idea you'd say that. All right, so that's my rebuttal. I'll move on to my second point now. Just time check, please, Steve.
I was losing my time there. I'll give you another.
Okay, so my second point is going to be about the characterization of our Phantom, the 21st Phantom, who's been around for 80 years, and Lee Fawkes died 20 years ago. No one has seen fit to move the 21st Phantom on. I think we're coming to that time, but it hasn't happened. But so I'm talking about the 21st Phantom that we've had for 80 years. That character, I think... I used the word resonates before. I think the character of the Phantom as an ordinary man is what makes him the character that we all love and respect today. He's just an ordinary man. He's just a person who's born into an extraordinary set of circumstances. He grows up in the jungle, loves life at the age of 12, is sent to America, hates it, hates wearing shoes, gradually gets to be... fits into that world and becomes a star in that world, whether it's on the football field or academically and all the rest of it, but then is called back when he's required to put on the ring and swear the oath. From that point on, he has those same normal human doubts that any of us would have. He has a life filled with romance, but doubt about that and the jealousy between Diana and unsure about whether he wants to, whether she would ever want him and to live that life. The family life that he has as he brings up his kids and, Diana does most of the bringing up of the kids, to be fair, while he's off and about, but he's still there for his family. He has all of the emotions that we would expect when it comes to dealing with roughnecks, his anger and his rage at the injustices that he sees and that he has to fight. Those are all things that I think we would all feel and we would all recognise, and that's what makes him special as opposed to some of the superheroes who can just walk past any of that sort of stuff because of their abilities. That's something that he has to deal with, and that characterisation, that was engendered in him by Lee Falk. You mentioned the wedding in 1977. All of that, all of his early life, up, you know, that's all Lee Falk. There's not a story before that that contributes to the universe. So that establishment of the 21st Phantom, Kit Walker, as an ordinary man living an extraordinary life, again, that is what makes Lee Falk's Phantom the one true Phantom.
Thank you, Dan.
He's a good arguer, isn't he?
He's very good.
He's not bad. He's not bad. I like that setup for me as well. I will agree. The Fourth Son, a classic story. I will give you that. The Jungle Olympics. Unsure if I can give you that, seeing there's about rehash. There's a rehash of about 30 different past stories where someone steals the trophy and then the Phantom has to track him back. So I'm not sure if you can call that a classic. It's more of a running out of ideas and trying to fill space, I have to agree with your point about the Phantom, 21st Phantom being a super, you know, a super, not a hero, but a super human. That is another good point. However, you make a good point about moving the 21st Phantom on. If that ever happens, boy, will you focus not be happy about that.
no, we won't.
just have a look at these days when we get a new artist. You know, today when we were recording, you're having a lot of, I won't name them, all the countries they come from, where I could use that as a point to prove in my argument about the forecast. But, you know, people don't like change. And that has to be one of the biggest, probably the biggest downfall of a true forecast, is that they're very, very close-minded when it comes to change. Like, you're having a look at Manly, who's a talented artist. You know, first two strips, you know, of, you know, hopefully a long reign, they're down his throat telling him, you know, he can't draw, or telling him what he needs to do. And it's all things like, you know, too many lines in the Phantom's face, or his mask is incorrect, or a negative on some other past artist is that Diana's too ugly, you know, like, as far as, you know, come on, this is the artist, he can draw better than you. So, you know, unfortunately, Forkus don't like change. Another point that I want to make is that besides probably India, all the other countries where the Phantom has had extensive success, and I'll list a handful. This is not extensive, but this is a handful. You have Scandinavia, Australia, France, Brazil, and Italy. Of all of these countries that have enjoyed extensive success over the years, they all have one thing in common, and that is they all created non-Falk stories. They all had the license to be able to create stories or recreate stories that are not Falk related. Now, the reason why they, one of the reasons why they have had extensive success is so they can actually get new stories and they can reach the newer or the new current or even the future generation. Now, myself, I'm a little bit younger than my opponent here. I'm still in my early to mid-30s. It's amazing how early can continue on for a little bit further, but we won't get into that one. Where the story that hooked me was not a Falk story. The story that hooked me was actually an Egmont story, which was the setup through 1120. Now, the reason that hooked me is because, you know, maybe it's just me as a modernist or whatever, but I think there, you know, is... it was a story that added on to the mythology of the Phantom and were able to explore it in other ways. Sometimes not to the success, like Kings, and we won't go any further in King because I think 98% of people that listen to this think it was absolute tripe. So that is a tick in the you know, in the Forcus corner.
1 minute.
Okay. So the point is that adding to the mythology and exploring the mythology of the 21st, you've now got Kit and Heloise going to school and learning to become the Phantom themselves. It enables the character, the 21st, whether we kill him off or not, that's another argument, but it enables him to be able to continue on rather than him being stuck if all stories were stopped then when Lee Falk died. That will do for me for now.
Very good.
Thank you, Jermaine. As one who has just clicked over to mid to late 30s now, so I'm still saying mid 30s, though I've clicked over 35 now. these young buck upstarts, what do you reckon there, Dan?
I think you make some good points there, but it's hard to sort of sort through and find out what they are. So most of the good points that Jermaine made were the ones where he agreed with me, I think. So.
And he actually did that
he
a bit.
He did that a bit, yeah.
I noticed.
But this is my argument, is that it's Fork Plus.
I think that is a fantastic. It has to be Fork Plus. I mean, if we don't have Fork Plus, then we stop. And none of us wants to stop. None of us wants to go down to the newsagent and get another reprint of a Lee Falk story every week. You know, in moderation in those collection series, that's fantastic. But we all want to have a new story. We all want something new to read. So it has to be Falk Plus.
So did he just agree that I won this argument? Or
No. The thing is that the one true Phantom.
Correct. And you've got to build on that original Phantom that Lee Falk had. If you stray from there, then you've lost the character, and we don't have a character. We don't have a Phantom at all. So.
Which is what we all agree that King has done.
They took a bridge far too far. Look, as of this might upset some of the Forkists as well, but I think I've come, probably only over the last 12 months, I've come to a realisation within myself that I think we are going to have to move to the 22nd Phantom, and whether that's Kit and Heloise sharing the role, in a way that's much better than what King did, or whether one of them takes it up and the other doesn't, I'm not sure. I think if that happens, sad to say, we do have to probably kill off the 21st Phantom. There's never been a Phantom that's lived on to see his successor take the... That's the point, you know, from father to son. So that will have to happen at some point. I don't envy the author who has to write that story.
That would be great fun.
Oh, I don't. I think it'd be fun too, but I don't envy the criticism that they're going to have to get it just right. There's a big responsibility there.
I don't think the Forkus will handle it at all, mate.
No, I don't think they will.
They'll have to be in protective custody.
Well, I guess that does kind of bring me to the third point that I wanted to make about that story writing, and that is Lee Falk's mastery of the narrative and the storytelling ability that he had. I use the term simple complexity, and that's counterintuitive, I suppose. But he wrote a very simple story, but could inhibit that with a great complexity. The fact that he was confined to a newspaper strip, whether it was the Daily or the Sunday, you know, you're looking at 3 panels or 9 panels where you've got to contribute to a much larger story that might run for 4 or 5 weeks, like The Copter Pirates was a really quite short story. Tiger Tiger was a quite short story. But then you've got the epics like Phantom Goes to War that I don't know exactly. That must have run for years. And to tell that story in short little bursts like that, it shows a mastery of using the narrative. He also created the classic villains that we would regard as, you know, our touchstones when we think, oh, who are the bad guys? Who are the Roughnecks and the Phantom? We go Sing Pirates, Mr. Hogs, Sala and the Sky Band, the Toadmen. They are the villains who we all go to, rather than the more modern creations like Python. It's those guys that we go back to, and they're Lee Falk's creations. The love interests that Lee Falk brought into the story, obviously we've got Diana and the ongoing saga there, but also the way that the Phantom or Kit always drew female attention, never wanted it, didn't know what to do with it, whether it was from Sala, the Marshall sisters, Queen Zamaris, there was always those characters coming into it as well. So again, those are Lee Falk creations which have stood the test of time, and you can reread those time and time again, and those stories never get old. So that mastery of the narrative, my one regret about Lee Falk, and I wish he'd done this, and it was such a great opportunity for him. He created the 21st Fandom in 1936. In about 1956, he needed to be the one to move us to the 22nd Fandom. And instead of taking 40 years to get to the wedding, in the mid-70s, that's when he should have moved us to the 23rd. And he would have had that ball rolling, and it would have made so much more sense to keep the Fandom in our time. And we would be up to, what, the 25th or 26th or whatever it is now. Now, he didn't do that, and that's fine. The 21st Fandom, that's our Fandom. And he is, and I'll go back to it, he is the one true Fandom. How we deal with moving on now at some point in the future, that remains to be seen. I'd put my hand up for Peter David to do it. He wrote the Hermes series really, really well. I know he's not going to write the second run that Hermes is doing, but the way that he wrote that story, and as we mentioned earlier, it might have been before we started recording, that he harked back to he wrote very much in the Falk universe. And so his ability to do that suggests that he might be the man.
Very good. So, Jermaine, I hope you're taking notes.
Yeah, I am. I'm getting a hand cramp here.
Dan's making a lot of good points.
Getting a hand cramp with with all these notes. I don't think I've written this much since probably in my year 12 what do you call it, exam or something like that.
I nearly wanted to join the conversation there, Dan, when you mentioned the bad guys, the Roughnecks, and you mentioned the Python. But I won't, because it's not my debate. But I still nearly did then.
I've just written that down.
I might talk to you.
You're doing a great job, Steve.
Thanks. Okay, Jermaine.
All right, mate. Okay. So is this our last point, or have we got like, where are we with the argument?
And then you can do a closing statement.
Okay.
So this is your last argument, and then I'll give you a closing
all statement. All right, later. Okay. I might leave that zinger for the closing argument. Okay. I agree that you had some wonderful villains. Although just for the Forcus, which not sure if you know this, Dan, but did you know that the Sing and the Hydra, which was another personal favourite of mine, only ever featured in the one Fork story. Never actually did we get another story about both of those organisations.
True. Mr. Hogg would have been another one to come back too.
Yeah, Mr. Hogg. And then if you have a look at other great characters like Sala, Byron, Captain Horton, they only ever featured in one or two more. Now, some people may want to use that as the argument that Lee Falk was great in the sense that he was able to create new characters and not have to rely on the old characters. And to an extent, I have to agree with that, because we don't see a ridiculous situation of like Superman and stuff, or, you know, where they keep coming back to life, like the Green Goblin and all these other stupid, silly characters that they can't come up with another character, so they have to reinvent him or bring him back to life. So, but it is an interesting point that, you know, that Lee Falk never actually brought these characters back. However, and this is another example of where I would say that where Falk Plus, or the modernist point of view, is where Egmont, Sparta, Jim Shepherd himself, and some of these other creators were able to add to the mythology that Lee Falk created. And I would say that, you know, and also you've got other good characters like the Python, which Steve, kindly gave me that free kick for, which was quite good. So I would say that seeing Lee Falk never rehash these stories, was it because he was a great storyteller? Yes. But also, was it because he was never really that serious about the Phantom? I would tend to say yes as well. His first love was the theatre. Now, this is not a Lee Falk bashing podcast, because Lou Falk, we all love Lou Falk. He created the character that we all love, that we all enjoy, that we all spend way too much money on, and that our wives or our partners tend to get a little bit upset about. Like, you spent how much on that? So we all love Lou Falk for all those marriage arguments that he has caused. However, he did make mistakes, and I would put that down to the fact that he was, while he was probably serious, he never rated the Phantom as his first true love. You know, a couple of examples is we have the Phantom's home moving locations, which is pretty hard to do when you're moving a Skull Cave from Indonesia, then to India, and then back, and then to Africa. And then, you know, realizing that tigers don't exist in Africa, and then having to create a story about how they existed there 30 years after you'd drawn them back in there. And then you've got changing name of characters from story to story, and even inside a story, like one of my classics favourites, which was in the 90s, which kind of further backs up my point before that, Lee Falk was probably going towards his end of good stories in the 90s, when you have Jonka and Jonka, the same character, but different spellings inside a story. The Falk universe is limited and inconsistent. For a complete universe, we need the Egmont stories that yes, have to be written and are not always the best stories, but they tend to be a lot more careful and consistent about dates, who married who. You know, I know back in the olden days they liked to do intermarriage and stuff like that, but having the same Phantom marrying the same woman in different stories tends to be a little bit awkward. So Egmont, you know, and it's not just Egmont, you know, Sparta and even Brazil, all these other places have been given the opportunity to be able to add to the Falk universe, which gives us something to be able to enjoy new, even to this day. As my opponent said, it is much better picking up a new Phantom story than a rehashed story that we have 30 times already in our collection. So that's I've got one more. That will do for that, and then I've got a closing argument before, don't I? Okay. Yes. I'll make sure I leave some zingers for that one. Over to you, buddy.
Cheers, mate. Cheers.
Okay, Dan, or you? Okay. How are you going to convince the listener that you are correct?
Well, they probably already are, so this is a bit of a moot point. But anyway, I'll make it anyway. look, I take on board what you're saying there, Jermaine. You do make some excellent points there about the inconsistencies that Falk left in his stories, and the Jonkar is a classic example, as you say. Whether Lee Falk was never serious about the Phantom, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. You know what? That doesn't really matter. The Phantom is serious for me. He's serious for you. He's serious for thousands of fans out there. And so if it wasn't Lee Falk's first true love, that's by the by, really. His Phantom, whether he, you know, rated that above or below his theatre, it's still the one true Phantom. As far as those inconsistencies and not using the villains more often, you could argue that perhaps that was Lee Falk looking forward past his own lifetime and thinking, well, I'll leave some holes for some other people to fill.
Ooh, that's a good point.
How are you going to, you know, cover 21 generations of Phantoms and all of that sort of stuff? You've got to leave something for someone else. Look, it would have been fantastic if he'd sat down in 1934, 1935 and mapped out the universe and gone, right, Phantom 1, Phantom 2, Phantom 3, married this, born to that, lived here, went there, blah, 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 blah. But he would never have known that he would still be dictating stories on his deathbed, that 60 years later this was going to be such a worldwide hit, that he might have thought, I might get a strip out of this, I might get a year out of this. The prospect of having 60 years. So, yeah, he was making it up as he went along. Yes, that led to inconsistencies. You know, does that matter? To some people, it probably does. It to me, it just gives the opportunity for, you know, in the last 20 years and going forward, for other people to fill in those gaps. And we all love historical stories, I'm sure. And the opportunity for people to go back and write, well, here's a story for what the 14th Phantom did or the 9th Phantom or whatever, is just is just an opportunity that Fort created. So the mythology that he created of those 21 men who over the last 400 years have been this dynasty hero, and that creation that he made, together with the characterization of the one that we know the most about, our 21st Phantom, and that ordinary man in an extraordinary circumstance, and the use of narrative and the complex stories told in a very simple way, all of those things together make Lee Fawkes Phantom the one true Phantom, and everyone else is trying to build on that. They're trying to do the best they can. That's the plus that you're talking about, but they are using Lee Fawkes Phantom as their touchstone because he's the true Phantom.
Excellent. Thank you, Dan.
Okay. All right, so this is our closing argument, huh?
Yep.
All right. First of all, thank you for your time, Dan. it was good to argue with you. It was good to find someone. It's kind of funny, you know, we put this out to a couple of Fawkes, and you know they're all hot under the collar, you know, telling you how I'm going to be wrong and I'm going to be wiped off the floor. And then you ask them to join you, and they all go whimpering off to the corner. So it's good to see someone who at least is willing to give this a shot. That is a slight little dig to, John knows who he is.
You going to bring him up?
He is so not going to be happy with that, but never mind. Okay, first of all, I just want to raise one point. Dan, you seem a little bit unsure if you're a Fawkist or a modernist because you're wanting the 21st to be killed off.
No, I don't want him to. I think it has to.
For the 21st to be killed off, that is really going to upset the modernists, the Fawkes, as we talked about before. So, if Fawke had killed off the 21st, would it be accepted? And I would have to say no.
I think if he'd done it in 1956, it would have been accepted.
Okay, good point. Okay, now another one. Did you know that Fawke actually added an Egmont story creation to his Fawke universe? So let's just for a second pretend that we've got two universes, the Fawke universe and then everyone else. Did you know that Lee Fawke actually there was an Egmont story called Devil's Story, which is the one where Devil basically came about? Lee Fawke actually liked it that much that he actually added it into his own universe. So I would see that as a sign, not only as a tick of approval from Lee Fawke, but also as a, you know, that it is a Lee Fawke plus, you know, that the whole universe comes together as one, where Lee Fawke actually brought into his universe a mention from an Egmont story.
He's prepared to take on feedback. That's just a sign of the character of the man.
I would see it as more of a, you know, we could do it as that, but I would see it as more of a, that he saw it as a one creation rather than a two creation. Okay. Now, also, this may seem drastic, but I would say that the Phantom would be dead today as a character, or it would have an even smaller cult following than it currently does without new stories. Fru would be dead without the new stories. You know, we all know that the sales were diminishing quite a lot in the 70s, 80s, when Jim Shepherd, in his foresight, brought in Egmont stories. So even, you know, Jim Shepherd, who is, I would classify as a Fawkes, it as a necessary, maybe you would say it as a necessary evil, but he saw it as a necessary to be able to bring in these stories, to be able to add to the character, which also brought in new readers. Now, myself, I would classify myself as one of these new readers that were drawn in by the complete package or the complete universe, which included the Egmont stories. I would also say Egmont would be dead. Well, not Egmont the company, but the Egmont Phantom would be dead without these new stories as well. And to be able to reach new readers today, I think you can't, you know... Unfortunately, today's generation, now this is going to be a generalization. There's always going to be the minority that are going to be outside of what I'm going to say. But generally, the new generation that is going to pick up the Phantom comic and that is going to become a long-time fan, hopefully like us and stuff like that, are going to be drawn by these newer stories, which might be because the panels are bigger, might be because they're more modern, but these stories are going to be able to draw in the new Phantom, and then as he becomes a fan, he will then enjoy the newspaper stories. So I would say that, yes, Lee Fort did a wonderful, amazing job, but there has to be more than just Lee Fork, and that is a complete universe which encompasses, which draws in, I'll try not to use big words, that draws in every single story that has been created. Some are good, some are excellent, and some are crap like Kings.
Wow. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your arguments. I, for one, I probably got hooked on the newspaper strip, but it was the comic book that kept me there. So the reason why I get to be the moderator is because I'm sitting on the fence. I like both equally well. So, but what do you think, dear listener? Do you think that Dan's points are better than Jermaine's, or Jermaine's? I was trying to get up with a really good word there myself. It was with waffling, and I thought that'd be bringing it down.
We don't want any suggestion of bias. We want the listeners to make up their mind based on the facts.
Absolutely. So the two. So there are the facts before you there. Comment on where we say Facebook or something like that, or Twitter, and say who do you think has won this argument. There's no prizes, but just being able to gloat, I suppose.
Bragging rights are important.
Bragging rights.
I think it would also be a good discussion. Like, you know, once you've listened to it as well, feel free to continue the argument, obviously in a nice civil manner. Either two or four, or if you don't like one of the points we made and stuff like that, because I think that's a great discussion to have. Like, I remember, I don't know if any of you guys were a part of the Phantom Forum back in the day, but we used to have, you know, conversations about this, and it's a great discussion, and you learn a lot about your character, and you know, it is a good discussion, and when it's done civilly, which I like to believe that today's discussion was, and hopefully Phantom fans can kind of keep their passion a little bit under control and post some of their thoughts or their arguments on Facebook and the other various social media as well.
Excellent. And Dan, Jermaine and I, you know, we like the historical stories, but there's a certain fellow who's patting corgis over in England at the moment who takes a bit of convincing.
It's kind of funny. He doesn't like historical stories, so he's gone back to the old country.
Well, I must say, gents, I've really enjoyed this. It's I'm a big fan of the podcast, and I've been listening to it since Joe and Jermaine started it many, many years ago. I think it's a lot more fun being interactive and being able to have my arguments heard rather than just screaming at the steering wheel when I disagree with whatever's being said. So good on you, boys. Thanks very much.
Thanks for joining us, mate. It was good fun.
Too easy. It's been good.
All right. Thank you, Dan. And as always, you can keep up to date with Chronicle Chamber on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. We also have the Patreon site. Thank you for your donations to keep the site up and running, and for us giving us the opportunity to do fun things like
that. And don't forget the competition we got running at the moment as well.
Ah, yes, the competition about take a photo of yourself with your collection. You must have both you and at least part of your collection in the photo in order to win the Phantom price guide put out by Niche Press. All the details are in podcast. Was it the last one or the one before? Last one.
And there'll be a 50. Post up on Chronicle Chamber as well.
That's right. So we'll be all around that. And so if you make sure you tag either Jermaine or myself in it so we can actually see the photo. Otherwise, I might get lost in our news feed.
Am I still allowed to enter that, or am I ineligible now that I've appeared on the podcast?
Oh, you can still enter. It doesn't mean you win it, though.
Fair point.
Okie doke. And for an extra special treat, I found a new closing theme to end the show on. So hopefully people enjoy that. I've done it just for Joe. So you guys won't hear the theme now until I actually post it up online. But I thought this one, I wonder if anyone will pick where I've got this theme from. So anyway, that's all for me. Anything else there, fellas? Thanks again, Dan, for joining us today.
No worries at all. Been an absolute pleasure.
Good on you, mate.
Excellent. Thanks, guys.
Jermaine.
See you, guys. Thank you.
No worries. And enjoy the fandom. See you later. Bye.